Well, welcome back, George Hofford, with a good friend that's going to take maybe more than one session, Kevin, to do. Kevin Carter, a good friend here, advisor, confidant, consultant. He and his wife now have a daycare center, but his main job is he's got 9 grandkids. You can talk about that in a moment, Kevin, but this show is about the who. Today you're the who, and we're going to start with the 3 great questions of life, Billy Graham and all great religions. Who am I, where did I come from, and where am I going? Let's start at birth and talk about who is Kevin Carter and where did you come from?
As you've alluded to, George, we've been friends for a long time, and I've known you for a long time, and I'm a little frightened about where you may take me.
No.
But I think I'll probably get over it.
And, you'll be fine.
Your question was, who am I?
Yeah, who are you?
I am the product of some of the greatest people you've ever met
there
in your
you
life.
Okay.
Some of them you've met, some of them you haven't. You and I have been fortunate to share a lot of good friends here in Cookeville and both our previous haunts in Clarksville. And
that's right.
You know, we've been extremely blessed in that arena. But just a little bit, and I'll try to keep this short, and I expect you to kick me under the table if I go too long. But in my early years, I had a very poor education. Unfortunately, it was more because of me than it was of my high school, and after that, even college. But my father and mother, they had 6th grade educations. The family was originally from southern Kentucky.
Okay.
My dad was a sharecropper. And
okay.
Then he became a construction worker, and my mother was a housewife, and she supplemented the family income by working in various manufacturing factories around the Middle Tennessee area.
Sure.
I forgot to say we moved from Kentucky when I was about 3 years old. But truth of the matter was, it was, it was a tough life.
Yeah.
You know, we grew up poor, didn't have any money, and I didn't like it.
I understand.
Didn't like that a whole lot at all. But, boy, I was blessed with a good mother and father. My dad.
Amen.
Dad was a hard worker. As I said, he was a sharecropper, and he saved up his pennies, and he was able to buy a small farm in Middle Tennessee right outside of Westmoreland.
Okay.
And he was an extremely skilled carpenter. He could do a lot of finish work. He'd do a little bit of, like back then. It wasn't unusual for especially a farmer. If you were going to be a farmer, you better be a mechanic.
Everything.
You better
be
able to build things and tear things up. But he would work, and literally, I believe he worked himself to death. He died of a heart attack when he was 56. And if you remember when Nashville was booming, there was a lot of construction up there. He was working on the Opryland Hotel. He got to do some big projects or be involved in them. But he would get on the construction site at 6:30, work all day long. And then come home and try to farm. But by that time, he'd got a little over 100-acre farm going.
Oh, sure.
And he would farm at night and started out with mules. I'm telling you, that's not a place you want to be. You don't want to be behind a brace of mules. That's not a good experience. But he finally got things up a little bit when he got a little small cub tractor. As a matter of fact, we had a 40-acre field that he would sow for hay. And he didn't have the sore for the tractor, so I was about 6, 7 years old. He'd sit me on the front of the tractor with my hand sore. And he would drive the rows, and I would crank the machine, and we'd throw the seed out. Like I said, both of them worked hard. Money was always tight. Frankly, grew up poor, had no running water, indoor plumbing, and that until I was about 14 years old. But a good part of this is being poor really wasn't that bad.
Well, that was the way we all, I mean,
well, we didn't know
we were poor.
That's right. We didn't know we were poor because we were all poor. And what turned out to be a blessing to me was I never went hungry. My father was a farmer. I mean, we never lacked the food. I was a terrible student in high school. I graduated high school with a 1.9 GPA.
Okay.
And it was the early 70s. I liked to party. And at the time, the music and the recreational opportunities kind of suited my lifestyle and what I thought was important, and I took full advantage of them. But despite all those shortcomings, it did turn out that I had something that became my superpower.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean that from an egotistical way. I mean that there was one thing that I was actually pretty good at, and I could get better at and did, and take to my advantage. It turns out I could play football.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
And I played it well enough to be the first player of any sport at my high school to get an athletic scholarship. And Austin Peay State University and their infinite wisdom seemed fit to give me a scholarship to play football. And with the very supportive coaching staff and an even more supportive faculty advisor, I became a three-year starter for the football team.
Wow.
And I was a member of the 1977 OVC championship team.
Wow.
And
great coaches. You had great.
Oh, I did. Cluster Winningham was my high school coach. He's from next door over in Sparta. Jack Bischofsky, who's had a long career in college coaching and professional football, was the guy that recruited me and gave me the opportunity at Austin Peay. And then, you know, probably the best known of the three was Boots Donald.
Boots Donald, legend.
Yeah, legend. College Football Hall of Fame, and taught me a great deal. As a matter of fact, those three high school coaches and another guy that I'm sure we'll bring up, a mutual friend of ours, a fellow by the name of Charles Hand, who's in the beer industry in Clarksville, those are the four guys that had the most
influence
On me.
Yeah.
But I will tell you something that you might not know since you're not originally from Cookeville.
Mm-hmm.
In 1977, my senior year, when we won the OVC,
mm-hmm.
we actually won it here in Cookeville by beating Tech, which was one of Don Wade's last teams. And as a matter of fact, I talked about it enough. I had to quit wearing Marine because I was getting some unwanted attention.
People that might not work.
People didn't take a they didn't have
a, oh, man.
Well, let's just say I took it off and put it on the shelf where it belonged.
I understand. Yeah,
I don't wear it much anymore. Looking forward to passing that on to my son someday.
Amen.
Who also, he played at Tech. We tried to help make it up for it. He played a couple of years at Tech.
I did not. See, I learned something, didn't I? Did not know that.
But all of that is kind of a long, drawn-out story, and you're going to have to stop me when you need to.
No, that's great.
One of the things I realized as I was playing ball at Tech, because to be dead honest, I was not paying a lot of attention to my academics. I knew I had to have a 2-0 to be eligible. But I felt like there was something lacking. And football players, basketball players, baseball players, you know, they all kind of have their own little clubs and fraternities, would. I thought it might be a good idea to get involved in a fraternity.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a Pike. Once a Pike, always a Pike.
Yep.
But the Pike fraternity at Austin Peay turned out to be the 8th largest draft beer account in the whole territory for Budweiser, of course.
Holy moly.
And I mentioned Charles Hand earlier, but Charles is a very good businessman.
Great businessman.
And I think going into my second year of being in the fraternity, I became the social chairman.
Mm-hmm. Now, that makes sense.
I'm playing football. I'm in the fraternity, and I'm kind of going to school most of the time.
I understand. Well.
But Charles, being the businessman that he was, he decided that since we're the 8th largest draft beer account in the territory, it might make sense to hire somebody to go to work for him that had some influence or even some control over what beer, you know, the fraternity
Greek bought. Life, sure. Not just Pike, but helping the other.
I didn't worry too much about ATOs
folks
like
that.
I made sure that the Pike House had beer when it was supposed to have. Which, that introduced me to the beer industry. Long story short, and it is a long story, it's a 45-year-old story. I went to work for Mr. Hand. He introduced me to folks at Anheuser-Busch. I went to work for Anheuser-Busch when I got out of school. Moved to Alabama. Worked for Anheuser-Busch, worked with the Stroh Brewing Company. Came back to Alabama, helped introduce Strohs into Alabama after spending some time in Detroit.
Did not know that.
In Ohio. But when I got to Huntsville, we're slowly but surely getting to the cool
part. We're coming
there.
We're getting there.
I was the general manager at Turner Beverage Company in Huntsville, Alabama.
Young age?
24.
Exactly. We talked about that off air. Yeah. You're out of school and going, buddy.
Unfortunately, the owner had a serious medical situation, and his son had to come back and take over the business.
Okay.
His son was like a 28-year-old rodeo clown. Had no, and I'm not saying that. He was really a rodeo clown.
I understand. A real rodeo clown.
And so he comes back, and he's taking the business over for his dad. And he comes up to me, and I'd been involved in awarding the distributorship to him for Stroh, which put him on kind of on the naughty list with Anheuser-Busch because they didn't like sharing their wholesalers. And there was some dry territory that was going wet in northeast Alabama. And he asked me to help him write an application to Anheuser-Busch to get that territory. And I reminded him that I worked for Anheuser-Busch's competition. You know, I didn't really see how I could do that. But there was also a part of me that's a little bit mischievous, and I liked the guy. So I did it.
I understand.
And he got the territory.
Okay.
And as all that was kind of wrapping up, I made the comment. I said, you know, I've always been interested in going back to school, and Hustle's got an excellent school at UAH.
They do.
And I was interested in getting my MBA.
Wow.
And so I laid out this scenario to him. You know, you could hire me to do national accounts, and I could go back to school. And he goes, well, I don't have that need, I don't think. He said, but I do need a general manager. And I said,
you're jumping all over the place.
He hired me to be the general manager. We spent 4 years there. Anheuser-Busch tried to cancel us 2 or 3 different times for different things that we had not had any control over.
Mm-hmm.
But we got that lined up, wound up being recognized as the best Anheuser-Busch wholesaler in Huntsville. And about the time that happened is when my good old friend Charlie Hand showed up.
Charles Hand.
With a fellow that people around here in Colton will know forever by name and legend. Not reputation, legend.
He's past that.
Estes Rooster Wheel.
Rooster, that's exactly and, right.
I came here to be the president of the Williams Enterprises.
Man, we're just getting started. There are beer barons in this part of the world, and we're talking about George Hofford, Kevin Carter, back soon. Well, we're back. Kevin Carter, just really getting started, Kevin, with your journey out of school, young as a young person, managing at a pretty really high level in the beer business. So let's pick up right there and talk to us now about what happened.
Well, let me say this to clarify why it worked out for me. Obviously, I've talked about my academic background a little bit. Got that cleaned up quite a bit, but nowhere near to be the level that I was at in various positions. But it turned out that it was very fortunate to me that I seemed to always be in the right place at the right time. And over the years, as my kids were growing up, I had 3 daughters and a son. Dad, what do you do? What do you do at work? Well, I be honest with you, I just didn't want to tell them. Well, I'm the Bud guy. I'm the beer guy.
You're the local CEO, man.
But what I told them was, I said, well, I fix problems.
That's right.
And they go, well, how do you fix problems? I said, well, I don't know a whole lot about a whole lot of things, but I know a whole lot of people that do know a whole lot about a whole lot of things. So I know I'm the guy that you come to see, and I'm the guy that knows the guy that can fix whatever needs to be done.
Yeah.
And for you aspiring business people, young lady, young man, older lady, older man, it's always important to keep that in mind. As a leader, you don't actually have to know how to do the technical work that is required to get something done.
That's right.
What you do have to know is who those people are. And more importantly, how to find them if you don't know who those people are.
That's right.
So when somebody makes a joke about, he's the guy that knows the guy, you can ask for a greater compliment.
No question. No question.
You can get something done.
And the old thing about it, it's who you know and knowing people and being at the right place at the right time.
So to try to make this 43-year-old story a little bit shorter, Mr. Hand bought Williams Enterprises, and I went from being the president.
What year was that?
In 91.
Okay, that helps. Okay. And
I went from being the president of Williams Enterprises to being a branch manager for Mr. Hand. I think he forgot that I'd actually moved up a little bit since I worked for him in a warehouse back in Clarksville. But he reminded me of it real quick.
Yeah, that's right.
And make a long story short, I think this is something that's good for any aspiring business person or anyone in business to know. If your company happens to be bought out, the buyer is going to tend to want to do things the way they do things.
Amen.
And shortly after the buyout, we had a meeting, and I had all my sales managers in the meeting. We had the president of Ideal Distributing, who was a purchasing company, mm-hmm. in speaking to us, and he said, well, we're going to make a lot of changes. They didn't pull any punches. We're going to bring up all our policy and procedure manuals, and we want you to do business just like we do in Clarksville. And despite my almost need to argue that point,
well, I understand.
I kept my mouth shut for a change.
That's hard for people like us to
Very do. Difficult. And, so the president of the company, he gets up and he leaves. His meeting's over. And one of my sales managers asked me, said, what are we going to do? And they, you can imagine, they weren't happy. Mm-hmm. We'd been pretty successful in our own right and didn't feel like we needed someone else to show us or tell us how to do it. And so it's real simple. We're going to take these policies and procedures as they send us, and we're absolutely going to learn them front to back.
Amen.
And everything there is about those things, we're going to know it. And once we master that, then we're going to start suggesting changes.
That's right.
And then within a short period of time, what you're going to see is these policies that are coming to us are going to be better and improved because that's the way we do things. We constantly grow. We're always looking to get better.
That's right.
You know, I never went to practice playing or getting ready for a game or getting ready to play that I didn't try to get better. And I approached business pretty much the same way. As a matter of fact, I'm pretty comfortable in saying that everything I had needed to know in business, outside of technical skills, of course, I learned on a football field.
Oh, sure.
You know, you don't go out
sports,
to
life.
Yeah, you don't go out to practice just to hang out and see what's going on. You go out to practice to get better. And so we took that approach, and within a year, maybe a little more, we had completely rewritten the policy and procedure book that was now coming out of Clarksville. I had been promoted to general manager of the Cookeville and Clarksville operations. Yep. And a couple of years after that, I was promoted to our president left. And I was promoted to the chief operating officer.
Right.
And about that time, Mr. Hand's son, J.R., who you referenced earlier.
Yeah, you saw it was coming. They were grooming J.R.
Oh, we were all trying to groom J.R.
That's right. That was, understood, but it was a long-range plan.
That was part of the job, and he had an excellent education, went to Vanderbilt. Of course, he grew up in Clarksville and knew it like the back of his hand, and he knew that his mother was a McGugan.
That's right. And, that rings a bell, doesn't it?
That made him a little bit of a Cookeville guy, too.
Yes. He used to spend summers
here.
Yes, he did,
as a young man. And we had, in the meantime, we had bought a couple more operations, bought one in Hopkinsville, Kentucky, one in Owensboro, Kentucky. Was in the process of buying Chattanooga.
Right.
And the company was getting bigger. And then I was presented with an opportunity to go to Mississippi, of all places. I'd never really thought about moving to Mississippi, but I became the chief operating officer of the independent Pepsi bottler that had multiple locations in Mississippi.
Yeah, my hometown, Meridian.
Yeah, that was one of the things we had in common.
Yeah,
pretty quickly.
Yeah, there were several, four or five.
Yeah,
majors.
We had five locations. We had Macomb, we had Jackson, of course, and we had Hattiesburg and Natchez.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
Brookhaven. There was another one in there, but it's been a while.
That's a good that's another
that's
show.
A whole different chat. As a matter of fact, can I give a shout out to Lauren Wheaton?
Yes.
Lauren Wheaton is from Jackson, Mississippi.
Great.
And she was in school while we were there trying to sell Pepsi.
No, that's right.
And then she winds up here.
Doing a great job.
She is doing a great job.
Husband's with Farm Bureau. Mm-hmm. And
I'm not sure how – I don't know if that makes us like alumni.
Or could be. No,
just happen to be in the same town.
Something like that for our, especially our younger listening audience, most things in life is evolution, not revolution.
That's true.
Things take time. Plans do get implemented. They may not be on mine and your timetable, but and you never know who you're talking to. And I always tell my son, know who you're talking to. Learn who you're talking to. Man, we're getting a really good start here, Kevin. We got about a minute and a half, 2 minutes on this segment. So here you are. You went to Pepsi. JR is starting his career.
He's been in it his whole life.
But he's now graduated, ready to go.
He is now jumping forward a lot. He is now the CEO of the company. But what's really cool about the whole thing That company is now the third largest Anheuser-Busch wholesaler in the country.
Tell them the other cities that they bought.
They bought Chattanooga, closed that deal. Then they bought Memphis, and you don't think connections don't mean something in college. J.R. had a friend who went to school at Vanderbilt with, whose father was an investment banker in Chattanooga, and that organization owned a piece of the Anheuser-Busch wholesaler in Chicago. So just one of those things that worked out. They decided that they wanted to do something different with that investment. So they knew J.R., and, of course, they knew Mr. Hand, his dad, Charles, and they bought it. And so even though it's a huge operation, as you might consider, but the headquarters of that entire company is still in Clarksville, Tennessee.
That's right.
That's how good a job you did down there as a chamber guy. No, you kept the big national headquarters there.
No, that's right. J.R., I believe he's a part owner of the Memphis NBA team, or was.
I don't know the details of it, but I know he was, for sure.
Yeah, so, I mean, this whole thing has blossomed. And you played a role. Man, we're just getting started. Be right back. Kevin Carter, George Hofford. Well, we're back. We're just getting started. But unfortunately, it's our last segment, Kevin. We're going to pick up where we left off and keep going. Then we're going to talk about the future, the crystal ball, looking in the future. What are you looking at? What personally, professionally, what are you doing? But Ryan, let's just go back where we were.
Can you remind me where we were?
Where were we? You had... You'd been at Pepsi, and you came back.
We came back home. Career-wise, I hooked up with a consulting company.
You were gone about 5 years, 4 years?
Six, almost six.
Six. I knew there was a period there, yeah.
I'd hooked up with a consulting company out of Chicago, so it gave me an excuse to go up and see the team up there, and that was a lot of fun. And I realized that, I wasn't ready to quit working, but I wasn't ready to do that. Sometimes I'd have two flights in one day, and I'd be in Dallas and then back to Carolinas and da-da-da-da. So I did that for about a year, and then I started to make one of those things you were going to have to edit out. So I'll go ahead and say it anyway. I talked my wife into opening a daycare. I did not talk my wife into anything. That was just a bad choice of words. My wife decided to open up.
Great. She was with Upper Cumberland Human
Upper Cumberland Development District. She was a radio station. She's had a very she'd be a good guest for you.
I'll do that. That'd be a great.
That would be fun. Uh-huh. But anyway, she opens up the daycare, and I was close enough, so I just kind of slid back, semi-retired. I still do a little consulting as a. If you got a client out there that needs a little help in strategic planning, things of that nature, I still do that. But, for the most part, I'm a picker-upper. That means I pick the kids up after school. Yeah. And with nine grandchildren, I have no lack of clients.
And you're having the time of your life.
Having the time of my life. And our holidays are especially special.
Oh.
We were talking earlier about, our faith.
I know we've gone through.
It's kind of interesting. You don't, as you go through life, sometimes you don't realize who and what you are.
No question.
And then as you get a little older and a little more mature, and trust me, they don't stop in your 20s or 30s.
No.
Hopefully you continue to get older with an opportunity to mature. But when you have your kids, that starts teaching you stuff.
Yes, that's a major season of your life.
It is, because you realize, I really don't know what I'm doing here, and I need to do a better job.
That's right.
You get through that, and then you start with the grandchildren.
Wow,
that's playground time.
Isn't it?
That's when you get to really have fun, because the truth of the matter is, and everybody has said this or at least thought it once in their life, if you got your grandchildren, and they start to wear on your nerves, or they're crying, you just hand them back to their mom and dad. And you wait till they're in a better mood, and then you go back and play with them again.
There's another one you probably heard about, why grandchildren and grandparents get along so well. They got a common enemy.
This is true.
As recently as this morning, and I won't go into that, but
this is definitely true.
Yeah, so it's a great time, and you're doing well. Now, you've been on the hot... Recently, hospital board.
I rode off after seven great years. I really enjoyed the opportunity and learned a lot about business, learned a lot about healthcare. One of the things I do hope we get a chance to talk a little bit about is not only my future, but the future of Cookeville. And I can tell you right now, that hospital is a key player.
It's a critical part of
It's a critical player.
That gets into a lot of discussion. But, you know, I learned this years ago from Steve Copeland told me this. If you think about most communities, there are signal events that happen that make communities. Cookeville, Tennessee Tech, the hospital, the interstate. You know, you could name whatever. You know, most cities were formed on rivers, transport. Mm-hmm. But that hospital is a tremendous asset. And so you've been part of that for 6 years?
Seven. You served a seven-year term. And at the end of that 7 years, you know, it's – trust me, you're ready. Take a break.
I get it.
But I remember very clearly that when I first got on the board – you know, I guess some people might consider me a little bit aggressive in my demeanor or the way I approach things, but I would ask a lot of questions.
Oh, sure.
And I did reframe myself. I didn't ask a lot of medical-related questions because I don't know anything about medicine.
But you know what—
I know business, and I felt comfortable—
Strategic planning.
That I could play some sort of a role in that. And I would ask a question, and our CEO would always come back, well, Kevin, it's complicated. And that went on for about 2 years. And I remember one day I'd heard that answer about all I wanted to hear.
I was going to say, yeah.
And I pointed out very clearly, said, you know, I come out of the beer industry, and to my knowledge, the beer industry is like the third or fourth largest regulated industry in the country, and I understand a little bit about complicated. So the CEO and I, we kind of came to a mutual understanding that if I needed something explained in detail, might be better, more appropriate, you know, for a side meeting versus taking the whole board's time.
Yeah.
Well, also the way the board works, you go through rotations, and so for your first 4 years, you take a different committee position.
Yeah. Then your fifth year,
you become the vice chairman.
Leadership.
Then your sixth year, you become the chairman.
Okay.
And then your seventh year, you become the most recent chairman.
Immediate past
chairman. Well, when I became chairman, one of my first duties was we have a regular publication over there. It was put out monthly. I think it was monthly. And the chairman had to write, you know, a note, a letter, whatever you want to call it to everybody in this publication. And my very first one was, the title of it was, It's Complicated. And I listed all the organizations that we had to report to.
Oh, sure.
The numbers, thousands of rules and regulations that the hospital had to abide by. And it's, you know, all I can tell you is, Paul Korth, you taught me one thing for sure. The medical hospital business, it's complicated.
That's right.
Very much so. But it was a great time. I really enjoyed it. It taught me a lot.
So we were talking about it. You're a communitarian. You're a regional.
Is that a good thing? I'm not sure how.
Yeah, okay. It is. It's a good thing. But I'm saying you didn't just retire or go off in the sunset. You have been very active in this community, involved informally and a lot behind the scenes in a lot of things. So where are you going, buddy? What do you see on the horizon? And where's our community going? That might be a good one, too.
Well, I think the answer to those two questions—
Where we think we're going.
Where I think I'm going, where I think the community's going, I think are probably linked to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
There's four things about this community that I really think make it special and different. And I'm not talking heartstring stuff, mm-hmm. although it turns into that. But obviously, our location on I-40, you know, is—
Strategically. Could you have—
You can't plan a city.
No.
Any better?
No, it's providential, man. It's
the second thing, and even though you know I got to play a small role in beating them for an OVC championship, Tennessee Tech University is a huge resource.
Isn't it?
And you can write this down somewhere. It's already beginning to happen. It's going to happen even more. Tennessee Tech is going to be the leader in making Cookeville a technological center.
This is Tennessee's premier technological university, and that's the vision.
You're a vision
for the future.
If you think, I'll give you an analogy. I got Steve Copeland Jr., not Steve, but Scott.
Scott, yeah.
He and I got into a interesting conversation one night about this very thing. If you're familiar with Branson, Missouri, and how it's a spinoff of Nashville.
That's right.
And it actually, back in those days, if you wanted to see live country music, you didn't go to Nashville.
That's right.
You went to Branson.
That's right.
There is no reason that Cookeville couldn't play the same role that Branson played to Nashville.
That's right.
And when we try to recruit doctors for the hospital, sometimes we get complaints that, well, you know, my wife doesn't really like you here. There's no place to shop. There's no place to have nice dinners. I said, well, yeah, be realistic. You're an hour and a half max from Nashville. But more importantly, you're about an hour and 15, 20 minutes from an international airport. And if your wife wants to have dinner in Paris, all you got to do is take her.
Yeah.
And so our location is
halfway between Canada and Mexico.
Oh, man, there's a reason the World's Fair was in Knoxville. It was because it was close to Cookeville.
Yeah, you got it, buddy.
But
we don't know how good we are because this is who we are. We're learning.
We don't know it. We don't recognize it. And what I'm personally afraid of is that we take it for granted.
Yeah.
Now, so we talked about the location. We talked about the university. And the hospital, not because I was fortunate enough to sit on the board, but the hospital is a huge resource, not just to Cookeville, but to the surrounding Upper Cumberland area. People look at Cookeville and you go, well, you got 35,000 or so people in the city. You got 55,000 maybe in the county. What you really have is over 350,000 in the trade area.
That's right.
And here I am preaching to the boss.
No,
you know those numbers.
We're the Jackson of I-40 East, but we're bigger than Jackson in a lot of ways.
Absolutely.
I'm just amazed at our not amazed. It's just who we are. I mean, it's the future. And we've had this conversation off air.
Mm-hmm.
Our challenge right now is to don't go the way of just rapid growth at all cost, raising per capita income, technology. Achieving that vision,
controlled growth with very definitive. Not there's a difference between objectives and goals.
That's
objectives are the things you want to get done in the next little bit.
That's right.
Goals are the big piece where you start to touch that vision. And when you look at Cookeville, it has the capability to be anything that the citizens here wants it to be. And I don't want to leave out the fourth thing that I think is extremely important because I guarantee you, we take this one for granted. We have water.
Oh.
I mean, we have water.
We're not California, love them. We're not these other areas.
And if you don't think that's important, go talk to some friends in Crossville who has a challenge with their water.
It's a national problem.
It is. And now, how does that link to me? I'm not 100%, and I want to make sure I'm very clear about this. I'm not 100% satisfied with how our city government works.
Mm-hmm.
I am not talking about the people. I'm talking about how it works.
That's right.
Bottom line, if you want a slingshot or whatever the term was, you can vote. You get six votes, right? Five?
Yeah.
You get five votes, and you can use them all for one. I think we should have the mayor, council, former governor. Former governor.
That's a whole subject matter. But
how does that tie to me? I would not be above, if I thought that idea had a chance, I'd be more than happy to serve on that council to help get it passed.
Amen.
That's how important
I think
it is.
How can we serve? The Bible talks about the fullness of time, and God's not through you yet, my friend.
We're not done, are we,
George? Not done. George Hofford, Kevin Carter, what a joy. Thank you so much,
Thank you, George. I appreciate the opportunity.
Next time, guys. Thank you.